finite space of your choice, modulo finite group, and G is some finite group. And the group G can vary as you move along your space. And what Dixon, Avi, Vafa, and Witten said, if I understand correctly in that paper, is that if you for some reason decide to consider string theory on this orbit force, you end up getting the same theory on Crippen resolutions of orbit force. Never mind the technical terms here, but what it really is supposed to mean, this is some kind of space you construct out of the orbit you start with, if ever possible. But in any case, this is the topic of another talk that I'm not giving today. I mean, the point is that this, as far as I know, is the first time the string series wanted to study things on orbit force. And now later on, I think this was in the 80s, and later on, Eric Sharp and friends, I think in the early, I don't know exactly when, maybe late 2000, the later half of 2000, and between 2000 and 2010 and so on, Eric Sharp and his friends decided to study string theories on stacks. And this is not really much different from orbit force. The point is that, this is sort of a mathematically more fancier way of saying orbit force, and also more complicated somehow. But the thing that got me interested is, in particular, they've studied strings on gerbs. And then I want to define for you, or at least explain to you what I mean by gerbs, or sorry, I missed the word here, et al. Gerbs. So here's what they are. This is an R. Okay, so let's say G is a finite group. And B is some space, say orbit force. There's some space, like many, even manifold would be just fine. And when we G gerb over B is technically a stack. Let's write it like this. This is a Y mapping to B, which is roughly a BG bundle. And there are some explanations to do here. Oops. So here, this guy BG is, in algebraic topology, when you see a group and you write BG, you think of the classifying space which you construct using, I guess, minor joins or whatever, and it's some space up to homotopy. But over here, we want to think of BG as a stack. As a stack, it's a point quotient by G, and this is the what was the word? Stack of G bundles, essentially. As a category, it's the category of G bundles, and you can put a geometric structure on it and makes it a stack. And the most convenient way, as far as I'm concerned, of thinking about this would be to think of it as the quotient of the group G acting trivially on a point. Right. So and then we started, then in this sense, we think of BG as some kind of space, and this G-jub is supposed to be a family of BGs, you know, very incompatible in such a way that it deserves to be called BG bundle. So to be more precise, then we can think about how to build such a bundle, you know, using how we, you know, in the way that we usually build bundles. We begin with choosing a cover of your base. Okay. And then we try to glue trivial bundles. How do I write this? UI cross BG mapping to UI. Using the following data. Okay, so the way you usually build fiber bundles, assuming that it's locally trivial, then you start with trivial ones on open covers, and you specify how you want to patch these things together. So the glue means that on double overlap, you need to identify the fibers, and that amounts to isomorphism from BG to itself, which boils down to automorphism of the group. And this usual stack theoretic issues come in, which requires that you have a little bit more than the usual fiber bundle construction on triple intersections. You need an element from the group G. And with the following conditions. And usually in gluing fiber bundles, you have a compatibility condition on triple overlap. And over here, the usual condition looks something like this. You start with I. You want to go from I to K. You should get the same thing if you go from I to J, first to J and then to K. But because in here, when we're trying to build a gerb, there is one more thing we should allow. We should allow the conjugation by the group element GIJK. That's one equation. And on quadruple overlap, we have the following relation, which I can never remember. And I often get it wrong somehow. L. Anyway, some relation that we need. Okay, so again, the technical points aside, what you want, as far as interpretation is concerned, a G-jub is some sort of fiber bundle, but the fibers are some fancy stuff called BG in this sense. Yes, and you know. since I've said the word fancy so many times, it's not really clear to me why Eric Schaub decided to consider things like this. But he did. And now it's time to mention, yes. Phi KL is element automorphism, so it can be the group element. So now Eric Schaub and his four friends decided to make, they've studied string theory and more precisely conformal field theory on spaces like this, like these G-jerbs. And they've decided for some physical arguments I can't really follow or even read it to you, they've come up with the following statement or conjecture to my, from my perspective anyway. Or more precisely, CFT, a G-jerb Y is equivalent to or CFT on another space which I for now denote by Y. And here is twisted by a B field or C. Okay, so this is their conjecture. Of course, in order to explain the conjecture, I need to tell you what this Y hat is and what this C is. But I mean, that's their point. The point is, okay, if you have a G-jerb Y, so I'm going to construct this Y hat. And their point is, starting with this G-jerb, you can construct this Y hat and this C. And then they claim that if you study the physics on Y, it's the same thing as studying the physics on here with this fancy thing of twisting by B field. So let's explain the construction. Okay, so going back here, I have phi ij that I used to glue the fibers. So, and phi ij are elements, are automorphisms of G. And there is one thing you can do with automorphism group. You can decide, I'm not sure why they decide to do it, but you can decide to divide out by the subgroup consisting of inner automorphisms, namely conjugations. And that appears to be standard practice, and that appears to be something that people did in finite group theories anyway. And the resulting is a group called outer automorphism group. Now we have a bunch of things, phi ij in here. Let's send them down here. Now I get another thing I also call phi ij apparently, but with different letters. Now, what do I do with this? So now look at this equation. What I've done is I've projected these phis to the quotient by inner automorphisms. This guy is an inner automorphism. So if under that projection, this will become identity. So therefore this equation for the projected guy becomes, I have to get it right. J. And now this equation is more familiar from the theory of fiber bundles because this is how you glue principal bundles. Provided these guys are actually, this is the compatibility condition you need if you are gluing, using these things to glue fiber bundles. And what are, these guys are elements in auto automorphism group. Obeying this rule, therefore you get a principal out G bundle by using these gluing data. And that's, let me use Y bar for that. And this is a principal out G bundle over the base B. And this goes by the name of the bend of the G-jerb. Or maybe in French literature it's the lien, or the, I don't know, I mean, I can't read French. So anyway, the, what we get here from this, and this is one thing you can play with. It's not a priori clear why you want to do it, but you can do it. And okay, then I need, so this is one thing I need to construct. I mean, I should construct Y hat, and this is the step. This is a step there. Now let's then, the next thing is let's consider the set of isomorphism classes of irreducible complex representations of the group G. And now this is moving towards the sort of, you know, this in view of Tanakian duality, this is the kind of thing you want to do with a group. You look at its representations and hopefully you get everything out of everything about a group out of that. Okay, so now the point is we can construct an out G action on G hat as follows. So to define this action, let me pick actually an automorphism, not outer automorphism. And let's pick an irreducible representation of G. And then I can do this. I can simply precompose my representation by this automorphism. I'm still getting a map from G to endomorphisms of V row, and still irreducible. And moreover, if phi is an inner automorphism given by conjugation, then the representation rho and the precomposition are isomorphic representations. Yes. So therefore, if you project it out, if you quotient out by the inner automorphism groups, you get, you know, you get a map, you get an action on the isomorphism classes of irreducibles. That will be this. So therefore, we get an action. And the, I mean, the point is the action is now well defined by doing this. Okay, assign to the classes of these things the class of the precomposition. Okay, that's fine. Again, so far things that I've done are sort of okay. You can do this, but so what? And then. So now I have out G. My out G, this is an out G bundle, so of course out G acts fiber-wise on Y bar, and out G also acts on G hat. So LG acts diagonally on the product of y bar with g hat, then define y hat simply as the quotient of g. And let me, in a moment after I finish defining that thing called C, I'll give you the most commonly seen examples in which case y hat is really something trivial. But for the moment, in the most general setting I'm describing here, y hat is this crazy looking thing, which you can interpret as saying, okay, you have y bar, the principal LG bundle, you're replacing the fiber LG by g hat. Yeah. That was, okay, now about C. C is this, and the general construction of C is going to look even more unmotivated. About C. Okay, so now let's do the following. I have a, let's say I have an isomorphism class of irreducible representations. Let's fix the representative. Oh. Two people in representation theory. And that means I pick a particular homomorphism from G to a particular, to the endomorphisms of a particular vector space. Okay. Then with this choice, I can get a family of vector spaces. On y, sorry, y hat. Y hat is defined this way. So the way I'm going to describe this family of vector spaces is I'm going to describe that on here, which is done as follows. So for a point on y bar cross g, what's my notation? I'll simply assign, I mean, a point on y bar cross g hat would in particular include the class of a representation. And for that point, I'll simply assign this vector space that I chose to represent a row. I can do that. And this, you know, in general, such a family of vector space doesn't have to be a vector bundle, but the obstruction for this to be a vector bundle on y hat is a Tuchel cycle. It's a U1 value Tuchel cycle, which is the inverse of C. I mean, Tuchel cycle, U1 value Tuchel cycle will be some check Tuchel cycle with coefficients in U1. And the obstruction I have here is a cocycle, and to get C, I want to invert the coefficients from this obstruction Tuchel cycle. Guess there's one point to make is that C is locally constant. But that doesn't make too much, I mean, that doesn't really play a role for the moment anyway. Okay, so now this is sort of, you know, I mean, if you're confused about why this is the case, and you know, you're naturally, your feeling is shared by many. Because I was confused for a long time. And I wouldn't even bother to read this paper myself, you know, if Eric Sharp didn't tell me about their conjectures. But then let me mention the most commonly seen examples of G-jibs. Example of G-jib has the following property, such that the band is trivial or trivializable depending on your technical identity. Namely, like I said there, the band is a principal LG bundle, and what I mean here is really just what there is an isomorphism of this guy with B cross out G. And to say that the meaning of most commonly seen here is sort of experiment, you know, based on experience, right? There are gibs that arise in practice coming from like root constructions or other sorts of constructions. They all seem to have trivial bands somehow. And even like the trivial product B cross BG itself is, you know, which is called a trivial gib, will definitely have trivial band for one thing. You see now if the band is trivial, and you look at the construction of Y hat, you're taking the band and cross G hat and quotient out by the fiber group, out G group. So in this case of trivial band, this simply gives you the base B cross G hat. Right? You get the base B cross G hat. So you just think of this as a disconnected space, evidently. It has a bunch of components, each of which is a B, and each component is indexed by a class of irreducible representations. That's one. In this example, Y hat looks relatively simple, and you know it's not anything fancy. It's just a bunch of copies of B. Also, theorem of Giroux says that in this case, with trivial band, is classified by classes in a cohomology, in the degree two cohomology of B with coefficient in the center of G. Okay. So now I have also constructed this thing called C. I should tell you in this example, in the case of trivial band, how to interpret C. Now C is a U1 Tuchel cycle on Y hat. In this case, it's B cross G hat. So to describe such a C, I should tell you what it is on each piece. Right, B cross, say the class of row, C is obtained via the following construction. So over here, I have B, the cohomology of B with coefficients in the center of the group G. And like I said, according to Giroux's theorem, there's a class. You know, this gib, the G-jib, gives a class. And there is a map we can construct going from here to the second degree cohomology of B with U1 coefficient, and that will be the C. Okay, and the way to construct this map is amounts to constructing a homomorphism from CG to U1. And that's sort of so where there's a map on ZG to U1 comes from, well, what can it come from? We have a representation. Have a representation. If we restrict it to the center, it maps to, still maps to here, right? But central elements commute with everything in G. So Schur's lemma tells you that it must be scalar multiplications on V row, therefore a U1 value thing. Okay, so I mean the example suggests that the construction, this general thing about Y hat and C really sort of makes sense in the trivial band situation where you know, all these things that you do here are, seems rather natural. Okay. You know, doing natural things is one thing, but doing the right thing is another. But in any case, we've learned, I don't know about you guys, I've learned to believe whatever physicists conjectured. So I decided when Eric Schaap told me about their conjectures around 10 years ago, I decided, okay, it must be right and let me understand what's going on. Now, another point is, so now the issue is what does this mean? I mean, I think we can all agree that the conjecture looks kind of funny, looks kind of weird. So this is not clear how you want to interpret this. But it, in fact, it was there's already a suggestion in their paper. Pantev, Schaap, and Andel suggested the point of view of non-commutative geometry. Yes, in the sense of Alan Kahn, maybe. Okay. And we kind of just took the hint and made everything work. Everything just worked. So now from at this point I'm gonna describe joint work with Shantung. Okay. So where is that note? So the loose statement is that Y, the G of Y and the pair is actually a pair. They are isomorphic non-commutative spaces. And of course that requires elaboration. You know, what do we mean by non-commutative spaces? And really, what does that mean? So more precisely, things work as follows. Oh, dear. And the main idea of non-commutative geometry, at least in the sense of Alan Kahn, is that geometry is determined by the ring of functions. on it. And you take, then if you take just an arbitrary algebra, it's, there should be some space, or it should be the real algebra of functions of some space. If the algebra happens to be non-commutative, then you get a non-commutative space. Now, we have one here which is reasonably described as a space, but over here we have a space plus something else. So this so there's work here. But in any case, the guideline, the idea is to consider algebra of functions. Let's start with the gerb Y. But the gerb itself is not quite a space, but a stack. And the correct way of thinking about it, algebras of functions on it, would be to look at groupoid representations of them. A groupoid is this sort of and the way to think about groupoid is really just you got a space and you have another space of ways of identifying points in here. And that's what these two maps are supposed to be. This is source, this is target. So let's say you have a groupoid representations of Y. Then what you can do is you can look at this algebra, the algebra of functions on this space. This is the space of arrows with the following product. If I have two functions, f1, f2, their product should also be a function on this space G. So if I put shouldn't use C. Let's call it A. If I should define the value of this product on any particular arrow A, and the definition is the following. You simply look at all the possible ways of break up the arrow A into a composition of two arrows, A1, A2, and evaluate the function. Evaluate two functions on the two summons. This is the, what is the convolution product, right? So in this way you get an algebra, an associative algebra. It's usually not commutative, and all, of course, it depends on how you choose this groupoid. That's okay. Now, that's the choice. That's one thing we can do on the gerb side. Now, for Y hat is also a space, and if the base is kind of bad, it's in general a stack. So we should also, following this line of reasoning, we should also consider groupoid representation. Groupoid, and let's denote it by G hat with two arrows going to G hat 0. And on Y hat, we've defined some U1 value 2 cocycle, and we can choose representative of the 2 cocycle C. Also by a 2 cocycle on the space of arrows. Then then we can do something very similar here. We can consider the algebra of functions on the space of arrows with the product. Basically this product with a small twist. Again, you break up the arrow A into the composition of two, and you still evaluate the F1, F2 on this summons, but you also include the value of the two cocycle. And this is, this is a, you can define this, and the reason why this is a good thing is the product turns out to be associative. And the reason for that is the statement that this is a Tuchel cycle. So it all seemed to work out nicely. Now the fun stuff is, with Tan and myself is that these two algebras I should use, Sorry, I didn't introduce notation. Let me include the C here to indicate algebra with this product. These two algebras are Morita equivalent. Which simply means that they have as equivalent categories or modules. And I guess in non-commutative geometry, Morita equivalence classes of algebra are considered non-commutative spaces. In this interpretation, the theorem that we have here says that the gerb and the pair there are isomorphic non-commutative spaces. Okay, so what? This is like, you have something you don't understand, so you use something else that you don't understand to make sense of what you don't understand already. That's one way of doing stuff, but that's not the best thing to do. So. I mean, it would be really nice to get something more traditional or classical out of this discussion. So I guess the point is we can get more classic or traditional stuff out of this. Like, for example, if there's any quantity that's invariant on the Morita equivalence, then they will be the same for these two algebras. Yes? Say what? Yeah, we can, because there's space B flowing here around, we need to choose the group poi representations kind of nicely, then it really just those representations, irreducible representations that you come in to make the Morita equivalence. Yeah, so it's not a very difficult thing to prove, it's just messy. So we're going to try, but then the point is we can actually extract more traditional stuff out here. Now, okay, so my main background is, my main research interest is Gromov-Witten theory, or because I'm in a physics institute, I feel obligated to say these words. And certainly, in the paper Eric Sharp and friends, they've talked about Gromov-Witten theory predictions, for these gerbs and so on. It was sort of very tempting, at least on my part, to be able to prove something about Gromov-Witten theory of a gerb, in line with their conjecture. But the basic point is, we need to match the state spaces. And the Gromov Witten theory comes with, you got correlators and there are insertion or observables. You put in the correlators, and I'm trying to pretend I know the physical lingos, but I don't really. But anyway, so there are certain things you put into a partition functions that the state spaces. You must begin by studying the state spaces for these A model topological strings. So what turned out to work is, first of all, let's assume B, Y, and Y hat are symplectic. Has a non-degenerate two form, and that's the minimal requirement in mathematics, at least, to construct a Gromov Witten theory. So then here's what we can do. On one hand, we've already had this theorem saying that the two algebras are Morita equivalent. Now, this is the cool stuff that I don't really understand, but my friend Shan Tan's thesis has constructed deformation quantizations of these sorts of algebra. I think he only needed a Poisson structure on the groupoid, but you have a symplectic one, so it's definitely okay. So given the symplectic structure, you can construct a deformation quantization of this algebra, and it gives you some one more associative algebra. And it just happens. And basically, his construction works here too. And we had to write that in the paper, but anyway. So there's also deformation quantization of this fancier version of groupoid algebra, and ends up giving you yet another associative algebra. And the construction works in such a way that the resulting two algebras are also Morita equivalent. So okay, so far it still looks like complicated exercises. But now, like I said, if you have Morita equivalent algebras, anything that's invariant on the Morita equivalence will be the same for these two algebras. In particular, you can compute the Hochschild cohomology. So on one hand, you have the Hochschild cohomology of the group the deformation quantized groupoid algebra of the GERB, and we know they are isomorphic to the Hochschild cohomology of the deformation quantized groupoid algebra associated to the pair. Now this one has been computed before by I don't remember the name. Neumeier, Flom, Oshuma, and Tan. This has been computed before. Let me use the notation first. This is the Chenran OB for cohomology. Chenran cohomology of the OB for Y hat. And the technical, the excitement here is that this is the state space for Gromov Witten theory of Y. In fact, this is sort of the starting point of the whole project. We knew that we get the Chenran cohomology out of this process. So let's look at what happens on the other side. And sure enough, this will come out to be the state space for a certain Gromov-Witten's theory of the pair. This is just some, this is an algebra that defined by Run associated to a U1 value tuple cycle on a space. You can define some algebra, or at this level, it's just some vector space. But the point is, this is the state space of a Gromov-Witten type theory associated to such a pair. And just a minor point here is that, in fact, so let me write down the statement because I'm going to need. So then this basically this discussion, and the fact that like I said, we can actually build the Morita equivalence here and here very explicitly, implies that there is an explicit formula for the isomorphism, which is kind of important later on. Okay, and this is us too, of course. And at this point, it really makes a lot of sense to say, okay, let me keep this for now. It really makes a lot of sense to ask, okay, now can we conjecture that these two spaces, these two spaces, Y and the pair Y hat C have the same in whatever sense, Gromov-Witten theory. And of course, the conjecture definitely goes back to the physicist. I think that we certainly have spelled that out explicitly. Okay, and this is back to my comfort zone, right? It's like I said, I studied Gromov-Witten theory for a living, and this is very much the kind of thing that I like to do. Unfortunately, there's not going to be a lot of ideas to study this, when you look at this conjecture, you start realize, okay, I'm going to have to compute Gromov-Witten invariants and lots of them. It becomes hard. There were like specific jobs in which you can just test the conjecture by computing invariants by hand, and that's been done by in various cases by many people. The main evidence is the following theorem of myself and Tan. Which goes like this. Of course, the theorem is, this is an evidence, so it's going to say the conjecture is true, right? If the job it has trivial band, then the conjecture is true. More precisely, we have an equality of Gromov-Witten invariants as follows, and this is the one I really like to show. It's not the greatest equality of all time, but it's fun. So the equality looks like this. On one side, you have Gromov-Witten invariants of your job Y with some decorations like the genus and everything. Maybe called J. And there are insertions. And these Poisson classes And then such a Gromov-Witten invariant of the GERB is equal to the following sum over isomorphism classes of irreducibles. 2 minus 2g. Applying the isomorphism I constructed over there to the insertions. And you use, I mean, on the copy, I mean, then this is a version of, this is a certain Gromov-Witten type theory on B with the twist coming from that C. And this little row here is supposed to mean that it's using the copy of, it's using the C on that copy index by row. Anyway, it's kind of a fun formula to write. Yes, and the last point to make is, you know, this is the least interesting part of the talk, is how this is proved. Yeah, I would like to mention this because I owe this to Kevin. So the main point of the proof is to study the map. So there's a map from the moduli space of stable maps to Y to the moduli space of stable maps to B. The construction is simple. You have a stable map to Y, you send it to the composition of the stable map with the projection. That's nothing fancy here. But the point is this map is well behaved. Well behaved so that the theorem in Costello's thesis applies. So the point, I mean, Kevin's thesis is totally different from what he's doing. And I don't think he can hear me. Kevin's thesis is totally different from what he's doing nowadays. I mean, he studies Gromov-Witten invariants in that paper. And in particular, there's a theorem saying that about how, you know, under what condition virtual fundamental classes is pushed forward to a multiple of virtual fundamental classes. And we can prove that this map, for this map, the virtual fundamental class pushes to the virtual fundamental class up to some multiple, and that multiple can also be explicitly computed using basically covering space theory. So we can actually just, and you see that, I mean, then there's some other minor points in the proof, but basically this is how you can actually compare invariants here with invariants here. So I think that's all I want to say. Thank you. This is you. I saved the best part for last. Yes.
So, I mean, do you have, like, is it more generally kind of expected that, like, the non-human geometry of the space should tell you everything about this kind of smoothery invariants? That seems...
I don't know what to expect. I'm just trying to sort of get something more standard than just non-commutative spaces. But... I mean, I guess maybe I can sort of speculate a little bit here, because I mean, the conjectures, the statement that we prove is saying that, oh, these two things are isomorphic non-commutative spaces, and we are saying that they have the same Gromov-Witten theory, and we can actually prove that in some cases. You know, it seems to be, you know, from my point of view, the most conceptually natural proof of such a conjecture would be to construct a Gromov-Witten theory for non-commutative spaces. Right? If there's such thing exists, then this is automatic. So in some sense, I would like to view the theory as supporting the existence of such a theory, but I have honestly no idea how to do that. But anyway, I'm not well versed in non-commutative geometry. I don't know exactly what people expect to get out of NC spaces, but anyway. Thank you.